for January 30th, 2006, it's the Lullabot Podcast, Episode 3. Two, that's what we're calling it, right? Right?
Yes.
Episode. Intro to Drupal Part 2. We're going to continue on through the glossary of Drupal terms with
Matt Westgate
and myself, Jeff Robbins. We're the Lullabot guys. Well, we'll get to that in a moment, but how was your week, Matt? What'd you do?
Pretty good. I created a new video cast. Menus and primary links. Nice. And how they work in Drupal 4.7.
Very cool.
We're covering some of that today, aren't we?
I think we are. We're going to try to define the word menu as it's used with Drupal. And it's a challenge.
Well, I should be all studied up then.
Right on. Then you should give us a good answer. I hope. Did you do anything else this week? Anything exciting? Anything fun? Learn anything? Teach anything? Have any good injuries? Perhaps a snowboarding accident?
I got some good rashes.
Nice. Nice. That's good. Well, we want to put some pictures up on Flickr. And, be sure to tag them with the word rash.
Drupal rash.
Drupal rash, yes.
What did you do?
What did I do? well, you taught me some about how to branch my modules in CVS so that I can have them show up under 4.7. In the past, they just showed up under head, most of them, under CVS on the Drupal site. And some of my modules work with 4.6 and some work with 4.7, so I'm trying to tag them. Branch them, put them in the right place, and make all that happen. CVS is a challenge.
Yeah, that'd make it for a good episode, huh?
Yeah, we'll have to do one on that. I also am speccing out, drawing up wireframing a bookmark module for one of our clients, which will do like delicious bookmarking, like. The site Delicious, del.icio.us. And that'll be neat. That'll sort of be a conversion of the existing bookmark module will become this sort of bigger, better bookmarking kind of thing. I also have been doing some work on what was called the prototype module in the past, using the prototype and scriptaculous. When I first started reading it, because I was so familiar with Delicious, I kept calling it Script Delicious. And so and you work on these things, you sort of say them in your head, and then when you actually have to say them out loud, I have to sort of check myself sometimes, Scriptaculous. And, I'm trying to figure, I think I'm going to rename the module. The current name is SP Ajax, which kind of looks like Spajax for Scriptaculous Prototype Ajax Module. I don't know. I kind of struggled with that one. Actually, I should give some credit. Merlin of Chaos on the Drupal IRC channel actually suggested that name. And at first I thought, that's ridiculous. And then the more I thought about it, I thought, that's actually better than anything I've come up with. So... Finally committed the bio module that I'd been talking about. That one's on the Drupal site. You can find that. I think if I did it correctly, I tagged it to branch it for 4.7.
We'll have to hit those terms again.
And this week, Drupal 4.7 beta 4
yeah.
Came out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting there. We should be to beta 16 in no time. Okay. Well, should we just dive right into the glossary?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, Matt, you want to start?
Yeah. The first one we have on our list is site. And when we say the term site, we're going to use it in the Drupal sense, of course. And what we're referring to specifically is the sites folder that's inside the Drupal installation. And that's where your settings are found, your database connection settings and the base URL of your site. And what happens is when you fire up Drupal, when you visit a page, Drupal will look in the sites folder for its configuration information. If you only by default, the default folder is in there, and that's where it will look if it can't find anything else. But what you can do is you can have site-specific connection settings. So, for example, if you build your site on your local computer first, you can have a folder in there called localhost with a settings.php file inside that. And you can have your database connection settings and your base URL for your local installation. And then you can also create another folder in that sites folder. You know, if the name of your site was going to be example.com, you could call the folder example.com, put your connection settings inside there, so that you can download and upload between the two sites, and you don't have to redo your settings each time. It'll automatically pick them up because Drupal inspects the URL and then looks for a sites folder that has the same host name as the, its current host site.
So you can do some pretty crazy stuff with that, right? I mean, like, you can also put a themes directory in there, and those different themes will show up, and there could be different settings for different sites, but they could still conceivably either read off the same database. They're also building from the same, you know, modules install and the same, it's all the same Drupal install. So for instance, you could, have a subdomain, mat.lullabot.com that had a totally different theme but had the same information, as jeff.lullabot.com, and you would do that using the site, different configuration files or different themes folders in different configuration directories in the sites folder directory.
Yeah, that's right. There's a whole bunch of things you can do.
What it's important for people to know is that it can be done, and don't worry about it until you need to do it. So,
yeah, you can really branch out. It's for multi-site configurations. You can have many sites running off one Drupal code base, and the information on that is actually in the settings.php file. So if you read through all that help text at the beginning, it'll give you some information on how to do a multi-site installation.
And there's actually, that just sort of reminds me, there's a lot of information in the code of Drupal. So even if you're not a very technically minded person, don't be afraid to kind of open it up, because there's a lot of stuff that's just, the help text is right in there.
Just don't change anything.
Yeah, just don't change anything. Please don't hack Drupal. It doesn't help anyone, especially yourself. We'll get to that in another podcast. The next word on our list is watchdog.
Yeah.
Ruff, ruff.
You want to take that one?
Well, Watchdog is sort of the gateway to Drupal's entire log system. the word watchdog isn't really used in the Drupal configuration, you know, the Drupal front end too much, but it's used in the back end as basically a way to get information into the logs and keep track of what's going on with your site, so that when you go to the admin page or the admin logs page, you can see what's happening, who logged in, what pages were not found when cron jobs ran, and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's an API, too, which means it's a module developers can hook into this watchdog system. So they can write their own log messages to the admin interface, too. You know, it's useful. Jeff has used it before for debugging to kind of map out the workflow of his module so that when a client complains if it's not working, he can kind of backtrack and see what happened. And it can come in really handy.
Yeah.
Menus.
Here it is.
Jeff, you want to take that one?
No.
I don't blame you. So when we say menus in Drupal, it has a very specific meaning. There's actually a menu module. And to developers, what it is it's a way to register callbacks within their modules that they write. So that when you go to my module/action, it maps to a PHP function that is also tied around user permissions that determines whether or not that function gets executed. So it has this really complex meaning for developers.
But it means what happens on what page of your website, right?
Is
that what it basically
correct.
Means? So like when
basically.
when you go to admin/modules, you see the list of modules, and that has happened because the menu system has gone through and said, okay, admin/modules gives the, you know, runs the...
Maps to this bit of code.
Right.
Yeah. But for end users, it's a lot easier, thankfully. It's a way to create a site navigation. You may have seen the primary links and secondary links in themes where you can add and edit those. That's all handled by the menu system now, which is new for Drupal 4.7. In 4.6, it was just a text area. But if you go to admin/menu, that's where the interface is for the menu system. And you can add menu items and remove menu items. And you can even change the Drupal's built-in menu items. You can disable them. You can add them to another menu. You can have multiple menus on your site. And all that stuff is, well, I'm going to cover most of it in the video cast that I'll be releasing in the next couple of days.
I think the menu system is really the unsung hero of Drupal. I mean, people get excited about Drupal's taxonomy system and obviously the whole user system and the, you know, being able to assign different roles, but the menu system really does a great job of organizing stuff. It's just really, really powerful system. It's also a little bit confusing for developers to figure out, but the knowledge of the menu system pays off. So under menu we have things like primary and secondary links, which are menu items. What are those and how do those work?
Yeah, it's just it's kind of related to the theme system. We wanted to give end users a really easy way to throw some links up in their theme and get a navigation system up and running. So most themes implement primary and secondary links. And you just add those via the menu system now. And another really cool thing with the menu system and the next release of Drupal is that the adding navigation links is now integrated into the content creation form. So when you create your new about page, after you add the title and the body, you'll see a little section underneath there that says menu item settings. And then you can define the link name and if it's a primary link or secondary link or where it goes, hit save and you have your navigation and you have your new page. I think it's really great.
And menus can be put the menu module also defines blocks, so you can put those links into lists that show up in blocks on your page.
When you create a new menu, it creates a block for that menu,
right?
And then you can go and turn that on.
Right. And by default, there's the user menu that gets created that has your username at the top of the block. But you can move any of those things into another block, and that's a trick that I often use because there's a lot of stuff in that user block that I might not want to show on the pages of the sites that I'm building. So it's a good trick.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of leads us to the next topic, the tabs, or they're also referred to as local tasks. And those are for example, the view and edit links that you see on the content creation page on the node form. You can view or edit that node. Those are just tabs. And they can actually be moved around too. And Jeff has a little better experience with this. He did it on a site for one of our clients for participate.net. He took the view and edit tabs and moved them into just a set of horizontal links in the upper right-hand corner of the site. I came to the site one day and I couldn't find the view and edit tabs, and they were in the upper right-hand corner. And I'd never done that before. I was really impressed. It was a slick little thing. Did you do that all at the theme level?
I did, if I remember correctly. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean, it's just important to know that none of the Drupal stuff that you see on most Drupal sites necessarily needs to go on your site. And we'll talk about that in a Designing for Drupal episode. We have a lot of podcasts planned, that'll be one of them. So what is a path, and how does that relate to the menu system?
Yeah, a path in Drupal is sort of the Drupal path or the system path. It's the, you know, node/2 or node/6 or, you know, any of those Drupal URLs. So when you create a menu item, you have to define the system path, what it maps to, and then you can create the link. Do we need to go into it in more detail?
A path is different from a URL in that it's how Drupal sees the URL. Correct?
Yeah.
I mean, URL might be something along, if it was clean URLs, the URL might be something like example.com/node/32. But the way Drupal sees that path is node/32. And it actually, moreover, even just sees it as argument 0 is node, argument 1 is 32. And then it takes that information, plugs it into the menu system, figures out that it's going to spit out node 32, and there you go.
Yeah, so when you're creating a menu item, or when you're creating a path alias, it'll ask you for the Drupal system URL, or the Drupal system path, sorry. And that's the end part, you know, the node/2, the node/3, or wherever you're trying to go. So I just mentioned path alias, so we should probably talk about that.
Path aliases, URL aliases, they're called as well.
Yeah. A cool thing about Drupal that I really like is that you aren't stuck with node/1 as the URL. Again, if you're creating your about page and you want to call it about.html, you can certainly do that. And you do that by turning on the path module that ships with Drupal by default. You turn that on, and then when you go to that about page and edit it, you'll see a little entry there, a little text field that says, give this URL an alias if you want. You don't have to use, you know, the node/3. And so you can do that. You can do about/me or about.html or whatever you'd like. And it comes in really handy if you're converting from an old site to a new site and you have existing URLs that you don't want to lose. Say your previous site was all HTML pages. So it's a way to prevent any 404 errors and, you know, keep the search engine results clean, keep the legacy URLs intact.
It's also really good for search engine optimization, which is something everyone gets excited about, in that Google and other search engines, in weighing the terms on a page, usually the title of the page and the URL of the page weigh a lot higher than the content of the page. So if you're searching for the Lullabot, about Lullabot or something along those lines, to have the page at lullabot.com/about is going to be a lot stronger than having it at node/32. Cache. It's a technical term, so why don't you take it?
Sure. It's Drupal has some optimizations that it does to try and make the site as speedy as possible. So there's a little trick that it does when an anonymous user is viewing the site, somebody who's not logged in. If the page hasn't changed, if a page hasn't been updated, Drupal stores a copy of it in a database so that it can load it really fast. Otherwise, what it has to do is it has to run through all the queries and crunch through all the algorithms to churn out this dynamically generated page that hasn't changed, which doesn't make very much sense. So it optimizes that, and it can return an anonymous user page with only one query to the database. When new content or when the page changes, the cache is automatically wiped, so no stale data no stale content is ever served to the site. There's some exceptions to that with authenticated user views. The caching system's gotten a little smarter, but as a general rule, your users are always seeing new content to the site.
So whenever anyone adds a new comment or anyone adds a new node or basically any new information, the cache gets wiped and anonymous users will see the new content. So they're always seeing the current version even though the caching system is enabled.
Right. And by default, this functionality is disabled. To turn it on, you go to your admin/settings Drupal pass.
Nice. And basically, as a general rule, especially when you're developing a site, the caching stuff can make things kind of confusing for you. So don't turn it on until you need it.
Yeah, until you're in production mode.
Right, right. Input formats. I'll do one.
All right.
Below each text area on the node form, usually, oftentimes, most of the time, I would venture to say most of the time, you'll see the little input format section. Most weblog software kind of does this transparently, but because Drupal has some extra strengths in this area, it can allow you multiple choices of different ways to format the data. With a blog, usually it will go through and automatically convert any line breaks in your content to HTML entities that tell the HTML browser to put line breaks there, because if you don't, you'll just come out with this big glob of text. Drupal can do that easily, but Drupal can also do other things. It can, using modules that add content filters, you can do things like have email addresses and URLs automatically become links. You can do more complicated things than that. You can convert things into, I think that there's a module that will convert stuff into the Swedish Chef. Is that right? I think I've seen that module.
Probably.
You know, from the Muppets, you know, here dish mir de bir de bir. Anyways, just an example of all the crazy things you can do with node filtering. So anyways, it's called input format filters or node filtering. Basically, all refer to the same thing. And these are modules that create content filters that can be enabled under the filter section. Is that right? No, it's called input formats section.
Input format.
That's another one of those things where there's like the term that the developers use and then the term that the outside world uses, and basically developers use the word filter and the outside world uses the word input format. So like node content element or content item.
I'll just add to that the input formats are just collections of filters. So you say, for this input format, I want filter X, Y, and Z. But for the other one, I want, you know, 1, 2, and 3. And so it's just a way to categorize.
So, for instance, administrators by default can actually create PHP content right within the node. But that's not something that you would want general unrestricted users to do, because, for instance, they could erase your database, which would be bad, obviously.
Evildoers.
Yes, evildoers. But there really is some great strength in being able to create PHP nodes. And that's just an input type. I'll take the next one. Cron. Cron is a Unix application, Unix program that runs regularly scheduled tasks, and other systems, other non-Unix systems have their own sort of version of this kind of stuff. But in Drupal, it refers to jobs that need to run at regular intervals. For instance, indexing the search engine, the Drupal search module index gets built on a regular basis using cron stuff. Or if your site was sending out emails on a regular basis about something, if you use the cron job, it would be a good way to do that. Stuff like that. And Drupal, because it's PHP, has a script that lives at cron.php that basically just gets called. The cron job does a little wget or a curl, C-U-R-L, function to actually request that page that then runs the cron job in turn. So you can actually run it from any computer anywhere. But basically when people talk about that it requires a cron job or you need to enable cron, that kind of thing, they're just referring to the sort of regularly scheduled tasks, and it's just an extra step in the site setup, but it's good to do for sites that need to do anything automated, including some things that you might not think of as automated, like I think the node module uses the cron job for cleanup, and as I mentioned, the search module also does its indexing on a regular basis and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there's more details about it in the install file. It'll walk you through a little bit how to set up cron. And also on the admin settings page, there's a cron section there that tells you whether or not it's working. And if it's not working, refers you to documentation to hopefully help you get it working.
Yes, get it working. Taxonomy. That is a fun one. We should probably just point people to Wikipedia. I think we can do that in the podcast itself. If you're on iTunes, we'll put up a little link to Wikipedia right here, and you can just click on it and take you right to the Wikipedia taxonomy explanation page, because taxonomy is an entire
science.
It truly is. It's a library science, I believe. It's the science of categorizing all things. Pigeonholing everyone.
Not to be confused with stereotyping.
It's the science of saying, I'm going to mark that one as goth chick. I'm going to mark that one as a hippie dude. You want to talk about what it means in Drupal?
How would you classify the Drupal icon? The blue Smurf wannabe?
Scary blue Smurf guy.
Smurf ninja. In Drupal taxonomy, we'll try to keep it much simpler than the Wikipedia scientific definition. But there's a taxonomy module, and what it does is it allows you to categorize your content in Drupal. So if you go to admin/categories. You'll be presented with what's called the ability to create a vocabulary.
I think it's actually admin/taxonomy.
Oh, thanks, Jeff.
This is another one where the word that the developers use is different than the word that the end users use. The word the end users use is categories, and but we will continue to define taxonomy.
So what I like about Drupal is that you can create multiple categories for your content. Most systems allow you only have one category, category of the content. But in Drupal, what you can do is you could have like a mood category, You know, where you could say, today I'm happy, today I'm sad, you know, today I'm, you know, whatever. You could have a color category. You could have a content type category. And so those categories I'm referring to are called vocabularies in Drupal. So you set up a new vocabulary, and then you assign terms to those vocabularies. So, for example, if I created a new blog post, I could say, you know, in the mood category, I'm angry. In the color category, I'm feeling blue. And in the content type, I'm just blathering on. So that's kind of an idea of how it works. It has many other features that you can do. You can automatically create views, so users can just see your angry posts, and it automatically creates RSS feeds for that. So if they just want to get to know you only when you're angry, you know, they can certainly do that. Would you have many angry posts, Jeff?
I try not to post while I'm angry. No posts in anger, please. And it's also worth noting that Drupal 4.7 brings free tagging to Drupal core, which is another one of those what are we up to now?
I like point 2.
Web 2.0. I'm a little behind, but Web 2.0 excitement things. If you've ever used Delicious, as I mentioned earlier, or Flickr, those are both all about free tagging, basically allowing users to create their own terms, and then you can view content all within these terms. So that's good stuff, and that's part of Drupal core right now. So. The next term that we have on our list is RSS.
I'll take that.
Okay.
RSS is it can stand for rich site syndication. It can stand for really simple syndication. The idea is that it's an open standard, right? It's not just restricted to Drupal. It's it allows people to syndicate your content. And its main purpose is if you visit a lot of sites, you know, each day, New York Times, CNN, Drupal, whatever, you can see whether or not those sites are updated all in one place because you're syndicating the content into a piece of software, or if you're a Mac user, it's built into Safari, and it allows you to stay current with content without needing to actually visit each and every site every day. And so syndication is built into Drupal.
And the idea is that it separates the content from the design, so you don't actually need to visit the website to get the content. And so it'll also allow websites to share content with each other. In Drupal, there's the aggregator module that allows you to read RSS feeds from other sites and display them on your site. Or you can use a desktop application like Matt said. It's built into Safari. I think Firefox has some RSS functionality. I really like an application called NetNewsWire for the Mac that presents RSS feeds in a very sort of email-like way. So you can sit down each morning and read all your RSS feeds in one sitting. You just see the headlines and click on them, and then you get the content and stuff. It's good stuff. It's a real nice addition to the web, and basically all blogging tools, most blogging tools these days present RSS feeds, and the better content management systems do RSS as well. It's good stuff to use, a good way to also keep up with what's happening on Drupal.org and other Drupal sites, because most of them present RSS feeds.
Yeah, and in Drupal, it's usually presented as a orange RSS icon located at the bottom of pages that can do RSS.
Yep.
You know, and that's mostly true. there's a lot of RSS functionality built into Drupal that's not necessarily transparent to the user. For example, if you're using the taxonomy module that I was talking about earlier, you can string that URL together in several different ways so that you can get an RSS feed just for the content that you're interested in.
Right, and so you can actually view content from several different terms at once. We'll do an episode where we get a little more into the taxonomy system and talk about how that works. But just know that powerful stuff, powerful Drupal stuff, more powerful Drupal stuff, but not as powerful as El Druplicon. the next word on our list, Druplicon, not to be confused with DrupalCon. Druplicon.
Is that somebody that claims to know Drupal but really doesn't?
Druplicon is short for Drupal icon, correct? Something like that. Sort of smash the words together.
Yeah.
It's the little guy, you know, with the infinity eyes on the homepage of Drupal.org. People refer to that as the Druplicon. Oftentimes, I refer to it as the scary, scary Druplicon. Or something like that. People seem to have some opinions about whether the Druplicon is a good icon or a bad icon, or a good logo or a bad logo. I don't have a big preference myself, but and again, like I said, not to be confused with DrupalCon, which is
Drupal Conference. I don't know where that came from. It just kind of happened one day.
Drupal Conference, which is happening February 7th through the 9th in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Matt and I will be there at Drupal Conference. Good stuff. There you go. That's another Drupal podcast out the door. We should say, if you have questions, comments, or anything.
Limericks,
corrections, or suggestions. We're always looking for ideas for the podcast. Call 1-877-Lullabot, and you can leave us a message, or you can visit our site lullabot.com and send us some
feedback
on the contact page, or send an email to podcast@lullabot.com. And we'd love to hear from you. So, okay. That's it. The end. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye, everybody.